Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jamil Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew.
All homebrewers have a favorite commercial beer, but not everyone can make it. Welcome to the show that teaches you how, where you can challenge two masters, Jamil Zainashev and Tasty McDole. This is the Jamil Show. Can you brew it? Now here's Jamil.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. Back for another Can You Brew It?
Wake them up. They've all been taking naps.
Who's been taking naps?
Our listeners.
Why would they take naps?
Well, you know, they had the other show, which is...
Are you saying because we had Bruce Strong before this?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
you're,
they,
that,
they
that put
like
them,
a lullaby,
napping?
Yeah, exactly. This is much
Son
more interesting, isn't it?
How dare you?
What?
You're insulting the fine efforts of...
Rock candy?
Oh, no, it's excellent. Excellent stuff. No, it's just not as uplifting as this show.
I got your uplifting right here.
Oh, okay.
Well, I hear you've been brewing some interesting beers, and you've been trying a new hop?
Well, it sounds
hop?
Like you're jealous because I'm not brewing for this show all the time.
Yeah, what the hell are you brewing something else for?
See, I
What's the matter with you?
You got me, see?
I'm going to be bringing in some more guest brewers to... Take care of that problem.
Yeah, I was able to take my focus off of this show and brew another beer that wasn't for the show. So
yeah,
I brewed a beer with the this new hop I got a hold of called Citra, C-I-T-R-A, and it's real fruity, real tropical. People keep saying mango or something every time they drink it, but it's really fun. It's got a lot of aroma. It's like 11 alpha. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty high for an aromatic hop. So you can put it late, and you can get a lot of IBUs, and get a lot of aroma. Really liked it.
Well, for the rest of the world, it may not be a aroma hop, but here in the U.S., we tend to take things that were originally designed as bittering hops, and going, "Oh, what does that taste like? What's the aromatic properties on that bad boy?"
Right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, people like Amarillo because it's of its aromatic qualities. Yeah. The Citra holds up to that as well.
Let's do like those other fine beer shows and pour me some, and I'll drink it on the air and smack
Chad
my
went,
lips.
And, Chad went and got it. I don't know if
talk
you...
Talk about it.
Did you bring that bottle?
Oh. It's the one next to you.
Oh. There's this thing on top.
With the, the thing on top, that cap.
Yeah.
You can open so people can hear it. See?
All right. There we go.
That's a de rigueur for those other shows that do that sort of thing.
All right, now you got some in the glass.
Got some in the glass. I'm looking at it, smelling it.
This is this is American Pale Ale. It's the Tasty APA malt bill.
Real bubblegummy. I see the mango.
Getting the mango, man.
Bubblegum and cake. Kind of like a white cake. Yeah, like a like a vanilla cake type of
Thanks, Tasty.
Yeah,
it's real fruity.
Like Chad.
A little fruity.
Well, maybe it's the Thai iced tea I had in this glass before.
Yeah, maybe you're a little fruity with your Thai iced tea.
Yeah, this beer.
And then lip smacking, that's part of...
It's I bittered this with Columbus, and then all the late additions are Citra, including the dry hop. It's just a 1056 beer. It's about 35 IBUs.
It's a little stinky.
Grassy, you're saying? Or vegetative?
Maybe on your side of the studio. Maybe it's something else.
Maybe his breath is backing up.
Could be.
Maybe, yeah. Have you bathed recently?
Mm-mm.
Wash your face? Maybe it's...
I used a washcloth on my face today.
The same one you wash your ass with? Or?
No.
No.
Ah, it's got a little dank stank to it.
Well,
now, I wouldn't call
Columbus.
It grassy and green.
Oh.
I'd call it bitter and dank stank. I don't know how to describe it exactly.
Very
but
Thai iced tea like.
No, I get that.
Yeah. So I don't know.
This would be good with Asian food?
Sure.
I think so. It's good beer. It's just a really different character to it.
Right.
Yeah, it's a different kind of bitterness.
We talked about this hop at the GABF on one of my panels we had.
Oh, that's right.
Had Steve,
much more mango-like.
We had Steve Grossman from Sierra Nevada in there talking about this hop and using it. They used it both in their harvest ale and I think in their estate ale, I want to say.
Your glasses are about
big
that.
Fans of it, too.
My glasses all messed up.
Oh, my God.
Is it yours? It smells like iced tea.
It's like caramel. Yeah. It's like a...
Right.
Yeah.
Vanilla.
Vanilla, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yours is much more mango-like.
Get Jamil another cup here. We need to have a re-pour over here. That glass is messed up. There you go.
Oh, still a good beer.
Tell me about that mango one more time.
Mr. Thai iced tea.
Thai iced tea.
Well, now it's a little more dank.
It's a different Can You Brew It show.
All right, do over.
Yeah, it's a little sulfury, a little rubbery.
Yeah. Yeah, rubbery's good.
Not green or grassy.
No. That's kind of a rubbery mouthfeel, too. It's not just the...
It's pretty thick, I think.
Yeah, I see the mango part.
Yeah, I get that, too.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I like it.
Anyway, so I'm looking forward to the ingredients kit.
Going to be a lot of beers with that hop in the coming year, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, everybody's... It's just coming available for the home brewers, so, and the commercial brewers, actually.
Yeah. Steve was saying that it's been around for something like 15 years.
Is that right?
But just in really small quantities, and people weren't using it.
Sure,
and now, they grew more of it, so people are getting it.
They're hoping for the next Amarillo.
Yeah.
Get people to know it. It's interesting, like with the Roselair, Y yeast product, they had a real problem with them. it's a good product, but nobody really knew what to do with it. A few people were trying it. And then, once somebody has success with it and starts promoting it, then, everybody wants it. And they realize, this is a really good product. And by then, it's too late. They already canceled it. Now they're bringing it back full time.
Yeah.
But, it's, same thing on the hops. If they tear out all this crop, you're not going to get this.
Right.
If it's not popular, if people aren't demanding it. Like Amarillo was, for a long time, nobody really seemed to care about Amarillo. And then sort of caught on, and then... Once there was a problem, then everyone's like, I got to have Amarillo.
Sure. So. Same thing happened with Family Guy.
Right.
I'm being serious, right?
Exactly.
It was this great show that nobody cared about. Right. They canceled it, put it on DVD, and now it's the hottest show on television again, and then they brought it back.
They brought it back.
It's all about canceling. We should cancel your show, Jamil, and see how popular we get.
we'll see how well you do here at the Brewing Network without my shows. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure ratings will really, really spike at that point.
Well, I'll sell the DVDs is what I'm getting at.
Now you're talking. Now you can actually make some money.
That's right.
Right. Well,
cancel and sell the DVD. It might be the way to go.
We'll just bring in another ringer.
Well, the only problem.
You don't think this is the real Jamil, do you? He doesn't have time for this.
He hasn't been around since year one.
We got rid of him early.
I don't think our fine sponsor, Northern Brewer, would appreciate canceling the show.
Probably not.
No, why we have a fake Jamil.
They've been with us for, the real one couldn't do it anymore. I
exactly.
Gave up
Uppity
on
bastard.
All you assholes long ago. they've supported us since the very beginning or very early days and made this show possible. And if you appreciate that and you like this show, make sure you go to Northern Brewer for your ingredients to brew these beers. And at the very least, let them know that you appreciate them giving us the support and making all this possible. Hit them up with an email, stop by their store, find something to buy on their site, and let them know how much you appreciate the fact that they make this possible. And if you do that, they'll keep supporting us, and we'll keep putting out these shows for you. Let's see. What's our challenge today, Justin?
Well, a listener called in to challenge you guys, and this work cut out for you. This is a brewery that we all know and love and tough beers to make. Here's your challenge.
Hey, Jay-Z and Tasty. This is Andy Polito in Germantown, Maryland, and I would love a clone of Jolly Pumpkin's Bambiere. This is a great saison. It has light fruitiness. It's very easy drinking, and the reddish characteristics, and it really give it that nice dry finish, something I really appreciate in a good summertime beer. So can you brew it?
Oh, yeah. You know, Jolly Pumpkin, now we're talking. That's quite a request. And, yeah, that is a challenging one. You know, all the Jolly Pumpkin beers are, they're all oak-aged. They're all bottle-conditioned. They all go through open fermentation. And they mix in, you know, natural, you know, flora and fauna from the region. So that's going to be a tough one to clone. I think they're doing very creative things as well. So I think this is a real good one. So what we did was got a hold of Ron Jeffries out of Jolly Pumpkin out in Dexter, Michigan, and asked him to give us some help with this. So why don't we do this? We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll listen to Ron tell us all about his beers. Back after this.
Hi. I have a sixer of Lagunitas in the icebox. My roommate's gone for the weekend, and I'm wearing something flimsy.
Listen, baby, I told her not to call me after 8. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I gotta go.
Who is that? Your girlfriend? You loser.
Shut up, thug. Did you guys get the cauldron set up on the altar of my yard?
Duh. If you weren't so busy getting booty called, you know that.
The hurricane furnace is using propane while you guys talk. All right, I'm using the scroll of Mosher to boil the first decoction. Nope, it's scorched. What do you do? Frack, scoop it out and try again. Doug, use your math rake. You took too long. The color is now darkened past the point where you can still call it a pilsner.
Yes,
I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this, Poindexter Urkel?
Dude, can't you see we're in the middle of a brew session?
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you belch White Labs 833 and crap Simcoe? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Cylon Detecting 3 Hearted Ale and the collector's item Super Alt.
Mine's in mint condition because it's still in the box.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brewpub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brewpub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. And Seven Bridges has the best selection in the world. Everything is a click away at breworganic.com. Join the mailing list for special deals and regular updates about new products and specials. They have been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for almost 12 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. Take the National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Enter the competition by October 10th for your chance to win great prizes, including a hands-on brewing experience at an organic brewery, brewing equipment, or organic brewing ingredients. Complete details about the competition are online at breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to worker and people-friendly business practices and environmentally friendly, worker-friendly brewing products whenever possible. Visit today, breworganic.com.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
I'm with Ron Jeffries, brewmaster owner of Jolly Pumpkin Artisan Ales out in Dexter, Michigan. Ron, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thanks for calling.
Great. You know,
I wanted to when I found out that our listeners were requesting Jolly Pumpkin Artisan Ales as for Can You Brew It, right off the bat I knew, hey, you know, it's a great a great challenge for us and a great brewery. The very first time I had any of your beers was in the National Homebrew Conference in Orlando, Florida, several years ago. And I'll tell you, I was just blown away by the creativity and distinct nature of what you guys were offering. I was very impressed by that, just you know, reading about the beers and seeing the beers, but you know, the flavor as well is just spectacular. Can you tell me a little bit about how Jolly Pumpkin came to be, the history of the brewery?
Sure. I'll try to give the exciting, the quick and exciting version. It's a lot like starting any business. There's a lot of detail that are somewhat boring to those that are not personally involved in it. But I had been brewing professionally before starting Jolly Pumpkin, about 10 years, I guess. And I got into brewing in small breweries with the idea, the hope, or the dream of one day owning my own brewery. So I worked towards that, and every brewery I worked at, I sort of treated as if it were my own, and putting forth the best beer that I could, and working as hard and as long as I could at it, so that when we opened Jolly Pumpkin, we had a pretty good idea, at least we thought we had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to do and where we wanted to go with the beers. And so I guess that's it in a nutshell. I mean, we started the business plan about the same time I started brewing professionally, or perhaps even when I was studying brewing science. And as a brewer, you don't make a lot of money. So it took us a good 10 years before we were in a place financially where we could start, and we could get a couple of banks to be interested in us and back us with an SBA-backed loan, and away we went. And the nice thing was that at these other breweries, I had the good fortune of installing a few small brew pubs along the way, and we were really able to put this place together on a shoestring budget that I still maintain to this day is impossible to build a brewery on.
And the artisan ales part of your name, I think of Belgian farmhouses and small little productions like that, and the beers that I've tried I think are very much along those lines, and I'm very impressed that you can pull that off. Is what's your brewery like? Is it some little farmhouse out in Dexter, Michigan, or is it something more complex than that?
Oh, it's pretty simple. It used to be a cinder block building. It's a one-story building. The owner of the building, we lease it, just recently put on a brick facade, so it looks like an old brick building now. We lease about one-third of that building, and we've got, so the inside, the cinder block walls and old wood joist ceilings, and kind of a big open space where we've put in our brew house down at one end. We have a 10-barrel brew house, so each one of our batches is roughly 300 gallons, give or take. We need to size our batches, though, according to the number of barrels, wood barrels, that we're going to go in eventually. So even though we could brew more or less, we tend to brew a little bit less than 10 barrels with every batch. Just it works out for the number of barrels we like to fill. We have all open fermenters, so we've got one kind of little section of the brewery there, our fermentation area, and the rest is full of barrels, a little bottler, and pallets and pallets of bottles that are conditioning. We have a bottle re-fermentation. All the beers that we do are unfiltered, unpasteurized, and re-fermented in the bottle, so we have a lot of beer in progress here from some of the barrels that age for many years before blending to after bottling. They sit around here for another few months before we sell them, so it's a nice little brewery. We've painted it bright colors. You know, I figured we were spending a lot of time here, so we've got some nice brightly colored walls.
And where could people find your beers? What's your distribution?
We wholesale all over the country. We're a really, really small brewery, but we do, as you said, this kind of niche beer that certain people really, really find enjoyable. And it's been my my business model and philosophy from the beginning was to be a small national, or maybe even eventually international, boutique brewery. So we weren't going to be brewing lots of beer, but we would be shipping it all over the world, just like some of those small Belgian breweries that you mentioned. We'd send our beer wherever people wanted to drink it, and so we developed our distribution model kind of based on that hither and there willy-nilly approach, and we ship all over the country. We're very difficult to find, but most states have a wholesaler that once in a while will order our beer and we'll end up in stores. You know, always best to check your best bottle shop in the area, or as far as bigger stores, Whole Foods tends to pick us up wherever we go, and like that. And if you send me an email, I'll at least give you our wholesaler's name and number in that area, and maybe they can help you find a store near you.
Very cool.
I'm not intimately familiar with every neighborhood sure. in the U.S. where we're at, but you know, I can try to put you in touch with the folks who can help you out for sure.
Well, I'd say if any listeners, should happen to come across any Jolly Pumpkin beer, you know, snap it up. You know, don't hesitate. Get it and give it a try if you've never before, because very impressive. Well, and one of the beers that we've been requested to try and brew is your Bam beer. Now, that's kind of a golden, dry-hopped, you know, combination of... spicy Belgian character and hops and, very difficult to, I can't just throw it into some category like I usually do, but it's, quite an interesting beer as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that, the Bam beer?
Sure. The Bam beer, I developed the recipe and the idea for the Bam beer. Probably we had only been open about a year at that point, and it was sort of a reaction. At the time, extreme beers were kind of all the rage, and people were calling our brewery an extreme brewery because we did these sort of Belgian influence or inspired oak-aged beers, and they tended to be a little higher in alcohol than your average pale ale or even IPA, something like that. So, although IPAs have gotten stronger over the years for sure, but anyway, we... I didn't really sit well with me being called an extreme brewer, because I was trying to make these very, very flavorful, wild, sour, oak-aged beers, and not necessarily super just extreme alcohol hop kind of beers. I was looking for something with a little bit more finesse than that, and so I designed the Bam beer recipe, and I called it a farmhouse ale. My other line is beeping, unfortunately, but hopefully they'll go away soon. So I called it a farmhouse ale because there's really no definition of a farmhouse ale, at least at the time. And I thought, well, this will be a nice, refreshing beer. It'll be pretty moderate to low in alcohol, something that is going to taste really great. But I don't think anybody could call it extreme by any means, although people have since I made it. I guess you can't get away from it in some senses. But the Bam beer, yes, as you mentioned, it's oak aged. There's wild yeast. There's a lot of complexity from that, and we dry hop it in the oak, so it sits on hops for a little bit while it matures. And unfiltered, unpasteurized, as I mentioned with our other beers, it continues to develop the Brettanomyces and the sour characters in the bottle. So when we first ship it out, when it's bottled and fresh, and we get a lot of people coming to the brewery to buy it because they like it really, really fresh before the Brettanomyces kind of kicks in, and you get all sorts of wonderful fruit notes, and the hops are a little bit more prominent. And as it ages, then of course you get the Brett coming out. We designed the Gristmill to kind of evoke a rustic character. I wanted it to taste like something that could have been made in those years gone by, in the bucolic past that probably never really quite existed, but that everybody likes to imagine. So we do a blend of different base malts. We use a Pilsner malt, but we also use a pale ale malt, and I use some raw barley in there as well to kind of give maybe the flavor of not quite so well modified malt. Some, again, malts of days gone by when there's probably a little raw barley in there somewhere. And some wheat too, to give it some lightness and nice fluffy head retention as well.
Malted wheat?
Yeah, we do use malted wheat in the Bam beer.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of percentages are we talking on the Pilsner, the Pale, the raw barley, the wheat malt?
Well, the Pilsner malt is about 50% of the grist, and the Pale Ale malt we do about 25%, and then raw barley between 6 and 7%. Mm-hmm. And the rest is going to be made up of wheat malt, and we use a little bit of crystal to give it a little depth of color, and just a tiny, tiny bit of black malt to, again, kind of give it that suggestion of a little deeper golden color than we would get just using all the Pilsner malts, as well as kind of some rough edges, if you will.
What color crystal malt?
Crystal 80, generally. We've bounced around a little bit with different colors, and I kind of settled on the 80 as, oddly enough, considering I'm doing everything else to make the beer kind of edgy, as the most neutral. So it just seemed to fit in a little bit better, and the other crystal malts that we would use kind of stuck out a little bit more than I was looking for. This kind of melts seamlessly with the beer.
What does the SRM of this beer end up being?
Oh, like around 5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 5 or 6, maybe. You know, color is so subjective, too.
Sure.
I've never sent it out to be measured. It's just kind of what I figure when I add everything up, what it should be.
How about the starting gravity?
Starting gravity, well, now the Bam beer, all of our beers are really well attenuated because of we have a nice, healthy primary fermentation, and then you, of course, have some wild yeast chewing away at things, too. So, and we bottle condition. So our starting gravity is, and I use the kind of a specific gravity rather than degrees Plato, just kind of the way I was brought up. But it's 1037 is the original gravity of that. The beer ends up being in the bottle about 4.5 to 4.7 percent alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And how about IBUs on this?
IBUs, about 25.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some whirlpool and dry hopping, so you get a perception of perhaps a little bit more.
What kind of hops do you use in this for your additions?
Well, we start with some citrusy American hops, and, well, they're all American hops, actually, all the way through. The signature hop that I like to use in that beer is Crystal,
mm-hmm.
and I think that without the Crystal, it would be a different beer.
So you have a bittering addition, and then what other additions did you say you do? You do like a whirlpool and...
we have a mid-boil addition, a whirlpool addition, and then, of course, we dry hop with more crystal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how about fermentation? Now, all your fermentations are open fermentations. Can you describe that for us? Is this... just like a large flat square, or do you have a filtered air or anything like that going on?
No, we don't have filtered air. It was important to me that the wild cultures that we developed here at the brewery were naturally occurring wild cultures. I had done at some other breweries some wild yeast fermentation with store-bought wild yeast, if you will, and was never really completely satisfied with the complexity of the beers. So I figured that to do what I was looking to do, we really needed naturally occurring wild yeast, and so we didn't really want to filter the air or anything like that. We didn't build a separate fermentation room. Now I kind of wish I had a separate fermentation room for some isolation, you know, but at the time we didn't. We started on a shoestring, and that was just one more wall that we didn't have money to build at the time. So now that we're open, there's kind of like barrels in the way of where the wall would go. And also with fermentation, you have a lot of CO2 created, and not being able to put in any sort of super HVAC system that would do a lot of air exchanges for me, I was kind of hesitant to box myself in that way as well. But we do have, with our HVAC system, and this kind of helps with the wild yeast, people ask if we have the louvers in the top of the building that we can open up to allow the cool night air in with all its accompanying microorganisms, and we don't have louvers, but what we do have is our HVAC system is sort of sophisticated enough, if you will, that when the temperature in the brewery is warmer than outside, and we turn on the air conditioning, it just pumps in cold air from outside, and mm-hmm. reverse is true as well. As you know, if we need it warmer in here and it's warmer outside, then it'll just kind of, rather than turning on the AC, it'll just use the cold night air. So when we do a lambic style beer as well, and when we are doing that, we let the wort just sit in one of our open fermenters as a cool ship, and we do it in the spring and the fall when it gets pretty cold at night in Michigan still. The days will be nice and warm, so the brewery heats up as we brew, and then we'll dial down the AC at night, but instead of kicking on and recirculating our air, which is hot, and cooling that down, it just brings in cold night air. So we kind of have a little bit of help from nature in that respect. But the fermentation, describing the fermentation, they're kind of big open pots, essentially flat-bottomed, round, and with a nice shallow dimension. We use open fermenters for a couple of reasons. I like open fermenters because of the flavors that they develop. I mean, fermenters, I'm sorry, I'm walking around, so I just realized I'm walking by my glycol chiller and my iPod again. But we use the, and you told me to be in a quiet space, so we use That's the open right. fermenters. I use the open fermenters because I like the flavors that they develop. When people stopped using open fermenters, I mean, until relatively recently, all beer was brewed with open fermenters. I had a young brewing apprentice in here when we first opened from Germany, and his first job at Bitburger, he worked at Bitburger in Germany, his first job was to scrub out the open fermenters they had there. And, I mean, this guy was pretty young, so, you know, they've had them up until pretty recently, as well as some other breweries that you wouldn't expect. I mean, Pilsner Urquell still has some down in the basement that they use, not for distributed beer, I believe, but just for, you know, in-house kind of beer. And the reason is because it tastes great. It makes some really great, flavorful beer. They're just kind of more of a pain with cleaning and more labor-intensive. And the switch to cylinder conicals was just really to make, you know, bigger and bigger batches of beer with less and less manpower. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I believe. And so when we were setting up, I selected all open fermenters to use here. I'd used them at some other breweries and was pretty comfortable with them, and I knew I could make great beer on them. It helps that they're less expensive, too, and it gets back to the whole shoestring thing. But we were able to buy four fermenters, and as opposed to, you know, we could have gotten maybe two cylinder conicals or something. And, I mean, we certainly could have started with that. We weren't that busy when we started. So, they look like giant open pots, kind of a, not quite a 2-to-1 as far as width to height ratio, but, you know, something like 1.5-to-1, mm-hmm. kind of wider than they are tall.
And did you have these set up with any sort of temperature control as well, or?
Some do and some don't. Mm-hmm. Some do and some don't. Originally, when I brought the ones in that didn't, I thought I would install some sort of cooling coils or jackets on them, but they worked so well with the yeast that I had selected without any additional cooling on them that I never have.
What yeast strain do you use on the BAM beer to start with? You start with a pitch of some standard strain.
Yeah, and then cultured brewing yeast. We use a White Labs 550, but we top crop it. It crops on top of the beer, so we're able to harvest and repitch. And mm-hmm. I've had some 550 beers that taste similar as far as flavor profile, but I've had others that taste nothing like the beers we do here. In fact, sometimes some brewers down the road in Ann Arbor will be, or Grand Rapids, a couple guys out there, want to do some Belgian-style beers now and again. They'll ask me for some yeast, and the beers they brew taste nothing like. I'm like, are you sure this is my yeast? Because they'll have all sorts of strange experiences with it, and the beers don't end up tasting the way mine do. So it changes, I think, a little bit once it gets in the brewery. But beyond that, I think that there are probably other processes, you know, during the brewing process, other factors that can influence it. Because, as I said, I'll give it to, you know, my yeast, which has been in here for a number of generations, to somebody else, and it'll make a beer that doesn't taste like anything I do here. So,
Well, that's one of the great things about, you know, craft brewing or, you know, artisan ales is that, you know, it's unique to the to that brewery. And, you know, you find something, you know, that you can't get elsewhere. You know, if everybody could make exactly the same beer, then, I don't know, it kind of killed the whole...
What would the point be? Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
So... what temperature do you ferment this at when you're doing your primary fermentation with this 550?
Well, I like to start it at a relatively low temperature. Say, you know, if we can get the heat exchanger to cooperate anywhere in the 64 to 66 degrees Fahrenheit range is where I like to start, and then I just kind of let it free rise up as high as it really wants to go.
And then everything else, all that incredible character and any sourness and all that you get from just your ambient environment. You're not adding any other cultures or anything.
That's right. I mean, by this time, the wood that we aged the BAM beer in has been in the brewery for 5.5 years, so it's pretty well inoculated with our natural dexter cultures. Mm-hmm. But the same is true of any of our beers. They are all aged in oak, and it's in the oak where we have that naturally occurring wild yeast. We have the souring cultures, and that's you know, where we get additional complexity. The fermentation, we have sort of nice, happy, friendly beer after fermentation, and we put it in the oak, and that's where it gets kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. And on the oak aging, how long does a beer like this age in oak?
It kind of depends, really. With the BAM beer, as I said, we have the split personality of BAM beer, if you will. We have what we, you know, the fresh BAM beer, and that's, we do a little bit of draft. We don't do a whole lot, but locally, BAM beer is one of our draft beers, and so that's the kind of the fresh BAM with all the fruit notes that I mentioned before, and just maybe a hint of tartness. And the thing about oak aging, and in particular a beer like this, where we're not trying to make just a single-dimensional, unidimensional sour, you know, beer with maybe a little bit of malt in the background or something, but we're looking for a lot of complexity with hints of sourness, at least when it's fresh. And the oak changes throughout the year. The weather, the temperature, all these things kind of influence the way the beer develops in the oak. And so it's a range of time. The BAM beer is one of the beers that gets the least amount of time in oak for us. We generally like to give it about 2 weeks, sometimes a little bit more depending on the season, and if it's in a certain barrel or it's a large oak tun, it's a 1,000 liter oak tun. In July, we have one that becomes very, very lactic where we like to do our white beer, our Calabaza Blanca, in there in the summertime because it develops this wonderful tartness like really, really quickly. But if BAM beer is in there, we need to watch it and maybe move it out of there more quickly as well.
And these barrels and this tun, are they made from an American oak, a French oak? Or?
We have some American, we have some French, we have some Austrian, and we have some German oak.
Mm-hmm. So you guys probably do a fair amount of blending.
Equal opportunity oak agers.
Yeah. So you do some blending to really dial in the exact balance of the beer in the end and what you want to be sending out for bottled product and all that?
Yes and no. It depends on the beer. Some beers are bottled what I call batch style or batch format, where it will go into, say, the 1,000 liter or the 2,000 liter oak tun, and that whole batch, or the 2,000 liters, really two batches for us, but those two are matured together and then bottled together without really any blending. And that's where the timing becomes more of the critical factor as far as how long it's in the oak before bottling, and then in the bottle when it's released, you know, for sale. So it's sort of a time issue that way rather than a blending issue. With beers like La Roja, which is sort of a sour Flanders style that we do, it's definitely all about the blend. And in that beer, we have at least 20% of that beer is going to be over a year old. And that one is very carefully blended. Every batch that we do, we sample, I don't know, 20 or 30 barrels sometimes of different ages to create the right blend for that. And then in between those two extremes of just a single batch that is all kind of timed as it goes through the oak to something like La Roja, we have a whole range of different amounts of blending that go into the beer. Our Beer de Mars, for example, and I didn't really think, I always kind of joke around with Will Myers, who's the brewer at Cambridge House. He makes these fantastic beers, but they're all so complicated, like what he does for the beer. He moves it over here and he does this and he does that, and I can never follow it. I we kind of laugh about it. But then I was thinking about our Beer de Mars production. Somebody asked me about it this year, and I detailed what we do, and I thought, that's really not any less complicated. So that is two of the same grain bills that we ferment with two different yeast strains. We do two batches, essentially, same grain bill, two different yeast strains that then are blended together into the 2,000-liter oak tun and matured for about a month in the 2,000-liter, then taken out and put into 10 or 12 separate regular-sized barrels in the 50 to 60-gallon range, and allowed to mature for another 3 months, and then retasted and re-blended back into the bottling blends that we do, and then maybe two or three different blends that we create for bottling. So you've kind of got a range of what we do, from the seemingly relatively simple to the why do they do that? It doesn't make any sense sort of level of complexity.
That is amazing. On the BAM beer, a couple more questions. What sort of boil time do you do on this?
60 minutes. I'm a big fan of a 60-minute boil. I do some longer boils for some of my other beers, but most of my beers are going to be a 60-minute boil.
Okay. And what about mash temp?
We do a single infusion mash here. That's what we bought. I mean, it's inexpensive equipment. So we do single infusion. And as I said earlier, I'm looking for a really highly fermentable wort in pretty much everything I do. And one of the reasons on that has to do with the wild yeast. And if we're sending a beer to packaging with a high residual sugar level, it can be fairly unpredictable, at least to us, as far as how much carbonation is going to develop. And also, you can develop extreme levels of carbonation, which are not very much fun for people trying to drink the beer sometimes. So we really try to get the beer as dry as possible before putting it into the oak. And along those lines, I tend to try to have a mash temperature of 149 degrees Fahrenheit, and I tend to have a little bit higher liquor to grist ratio, meaning kind of a wetter mash where you may not get quite the same level of extract yield, but you tend to get a more highly fermentable wort. At least that's what the textbooks say.
Right. Very cool. Are there any other tips you might have for us on brewing this beer?
The BAM beer?
Yeah.
Bearing or barring, as the case may be, having an oak barrel with cultures from our brewery already impregnated in it, I've had some pretty interesting and close to accurate homebrewed renditions of the beer that were brewed with yeast cultured up from the bottom of the bottle. So instead of having a completely clean primary fermentation, they had the Brett, the local wild Brett that we have in here in the beer from the beginning. And I was amazed, the aroma, they had the alcohol wrong on some of the best, which is unfortunate, but they did that kind of the nouveau farmhouse style. Most people, it seems, that are now making farmhouse style beers. Again, this was something I started brewing and calling farmhouse because there isn't a farmhouse style. It can be anything, or everything is a farmhouse style. And in any case, they tend to be higher in alcohol, like 7 to 9% alcohol. And so the alcohol in some of these ones that I had that were really otherwise accurate was way out of the ballpark for what we're trying to do with a BAM beer. And of course, that kind of makes it difficult to translate. But other than that, the flavor profile was pretty close.
That's a great tip. Okay, fantastic. I really appreciate your taking the time to share all this great information with us about the BAM beer and the other things you do at Jolly Pumpkin Artisan Ales. I'm really looking forward to taking on this challenge. It sounds like a lot of fun. So thank you very much for all your help, and take care.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Where were we?
You stole an oak barrel from the mist of Ravenwood, and Lord Zinfandel the Avenger is in pursuit. Do you drop the barrel and run?
Hell no.
We need it for a Flinders Red!
I'm gonna cast Pediococcus Damnathus on the barrel.
Sorry, your ghosts are imprisoned in his winery forever.
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
This sucks!
What do we have here, Orville Rodenbach?
Buzz off, guy! We got a brew session going.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you get a long-lasting foam stand when you think about wheat malt? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the pre-prohibition lager.
Perfect for steampunk.
And the single hop best bitter.
Now on cap and 10 forward.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a homebrewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
Now back to the challenge. Can you brew it?
All right, we're back. Too bad they didn't have the cameras going. They would have seen me bleeding like a stuck pig.
Hey, shouldn't have called me that name.
Yeah. What's going on over there, Jamil?
God, I had to punch him out.
You had to hit me.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I mean, really. Your beer's fine. Really? Yeah. Come on. I like your beer.
You took it back, finally.
I am a fan. Yeah. I am a fan. Please.
We need to have an intervention.
There's a little argument about being cloned, and we fix that.
Yeah. It's cloned. Please. All right. More. Yeah. Well, and for this one, great thanks to Ron at Jolly Pumpkin. He really came through with a lot of good information. It was really very helpful and very interesting. But, I thought about who we have to brew this. Yeah. And
had to go to the bench.
Yeah, it seemed a little too tough for me.
I have no idea.
Tasty would have screwed it up.
Not enough hops.
Did you think about me? Was I on the list?
I think about you all the time.
But not on that list.
Unfortunately, not.
That's
not
a different list.
Oh. Not in the context of brewing.
Just checking.
So we had to call in the big guns. So we got in the studio with us, Mike Mraz.
Hello.
And, when I'm thinking brewing a very tough, complex, Belgian-y type of beer, immediately, I think we all thought of Mike as being the guy we wanted to bring in for this. Your reputation precedes you.
Well, that's nice. Thank you.
And should we get right into, we tasted the beer. Mike actually brewed like, two, three different versions, and he supplied two versions of the Jolly Pumpkin. The Jolly Pumpkins are labeled by batch number, like 391 and 4.
I think it was a split batch. It was 324 and 325 mm-hmm. was the older version, and then 401 was the new version we had.
So when he started, he had the 324 to 325.
Correct.
And then today, he also picked up a 401 so we could taste, what they're like fresh and what they're like older and all his different permutations. And it's fascinating. It's really fascinating how different the Jolly Pumpkin beers are from each other just because their process is a little more artisanal, that they tend to vary a little bit probably with the season. They're pulling in that air into the brewery. So who knows? And open fermentation, who knows what's going on? But they definitely change, and I think they change in the bottle over time as well.
I agree.
So there's a lot of factors in there that make this a very hard beer to clone. And I would think, people... I was thinking, I think if I did this, it just wouldn't have worked out. So I'm glad we had you in.
Thank you very much. It's definitely a moving target. So
tough one.
Yeah. So, that was one of my, Jamil sent me an email saying that, hey, can you do these Jolly Pumpkin clones? I was like, oh, that sounds like a pretty, pretty big undertaking. And I was just thinking the week before, I listened to a couple of the Can You Brew It shows, thinking, these guys are getting a bunch of softballs. The brewers are coming out there, giving them all the information.
See, we don't get all softballs. This one wasn't easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a little egg on my face for that, thinking, so that's what I get. So
we started out with some easier ones because we wanted to get the show going, but we came to the harder ones, then we called you.
Yep.
Well, Mraz makes a good point. Just to clarify, sometimes we catch shit because they say, the brewer sits down and give you the whole recipe. It doesn't matter sometimes.
Right. No,
the whole recipe really doesn't matter sometimes. Because
You can get some killer recipes in Brewing Classic Styles and then, brew a shitty beer from that.
Yeah.
I've done it. There's nothing wrong with the recipe. Yeah. What I love about this beer, this Bam beer, it's a low alcohol, easy drinking beer with a huge amount of character. It's got that kind of a slight tartness. It's got a spicy note to it. It's got a little bit of hoppiness to it. It's got a little bit of kind of a malt background to it.
There's a lot going on in this beer. And when I first saw it, it was the alcohol content of it. I couldn't believe it, how small it was and how much flavor's in this beer. It's a very well done.
It's got more flavor than most Belgian beers at 10-11%.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic. And I could drink pints of this endlessly.
That's why I made 20 gallons of it.
20 gallons, right.
You can go home and definitely have a few pints before dinner with this one.
It's just fantastic. Yeah, and it's low alcohol and just incredible. Yeah. All right, so let's go through, and we tasted these four beers during the break. Blind tasting, you know, nobody knew what was what, and we had an opinion. Why don't I start this week with Tasty? What's your take on it?
Well, they're very similar. I would say they're. I can't think of a any particular thing I'd change in the on the clone side to make it even closer. I think the like Mike said, the his beer is pretty young. I don't know how old the real beer is, but the clone beer is it's certainly close enough that I'm going to say it's cloned.
Okay. How about you, Justin?
Cloned. So if it isn't reflecting the long, long conversation we all had at the during the interview, trying to figure this out.
We used the whole entire
30 minutes.
It was 30 minutes.
We just got to talk about it. Yeah. We decided on the last 5 minutes of the thing. I did choose the wrong beers. I actually thought that the two beers that were Jolly Pumpkin beers were Meraz's beers. Yeah. Turns out they were Jolly Pumpkins.
I'll take that as a compliment.
You should. Really, you should.
Let the listeners know, there was four beers to taste, so it was a little bit harder than just having two. So
yeah,
they paired them off pretty quickly. These were Jolly Pumpkins, or these were different, and these were the homebrew. So they didn't know which ones were which, but they did know that these pairs belong together. So
and Meraz is going to tell you why we had four, but basically, we had two of Meraz's beers, two Jolly Pumpkin Bam beers from two different batches, as Jamil was mentioning. I ended up saying cloned on one of your homebrews. With one of the batches of Bam beer. The other homebrew batch paired with the other batch of Bam beer, I did not think it was cloned. But it wasn't a recipe problem. There just was some kind of funk going on in what we thought was your homebrew.
And the one you liked was the WLP 550.
Right.
Not the Jolly Pumpkin yeast that I grew
up.
Oh, I see. So actually buying it off the shelf yeast was the one that I thought was cloned.
Correct.
So I say cloned. One of our standards is, would we change a recipe? And I said no. That's a cloned beer.
Well, and that was one of the tips that Ron had was, growing up the slurry from a bottle of the Bam beer. So that's what we did. I bought a bottle of the Bam beer, and Mike grew it up and used that for his beer. And that ended up a little more funky than anticipated. So maybe a little bit of that along with, some 550.
So it's freshening it up.
Yeah. I mean, depending on how close you can get from brew date and how close you are to Dexter, Michigan, I've had a few. I don't know the dates. I couldn't. They do have a log there for their dates, and I just couldn't find the dates, so I didn't know how old it was. Right. So that might help too. Yeah. But I wanted to do the 550 yeast to give somebody who couldn't get the beer at all a chance to make it. Mm-hmm. And I was worried about a lot of that funk coming through from growing up the bottom slurry in that old bottle. So.
Well, it sounds like your worries were founded because you found exactly those results.
Yeah.
Chad, what was your take on this?
Cloned. I thought they were really good beers. Really hard to tell the difference, other than maybe the clarity of the beers looking at them. But, man, I thought it was cloned. Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For me, I also call them cloned. They're all different, and they all have, different factors to them that there's no way in a triangle test that I could not pick out the different beer. In this case, I think there's enough difference for that, but and sometimes we've had them where boy, it's so close, I don't think this is quite that close, but I also think I wouldn't change anything, other than maybe when compared with the freshest Jolly Pumpkin, it has a little more dry hop character, compared with a little more clarity. And if I used the funky thing, I'd definitely also pitch some 550. So actually, and the one that was just 550, used 550. And did you use Brett in that one?
Yeah, I did after your fermentation. Yeah. I'll talk about the oak and then, dry hop. I added some Brettanomyces also to help kind of add the funk character to it.
Yeah, so I think that the Brett actually. Help pull it more in line, because the Jolly Pumpkin ones actually seem really very much like 550 and Brett, you know, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was thinking when you mentioned that. I was like, oh, you know, that seemed that way to me. But, you know, all of them really good. So I call that cloned as well.
Amazing. I have to say that from the time Jolly Pumpkin appeared on our Can You Brew It list, so that's before we even contact Ron, right? I said, no effing way. Anyone's going to clone this beer. And then listening to Ron talk about it, too, and the barrels, and I said, no way. So really impressive, Mraz, for you to be able to get close like that.
Thank you.
That's, again, why we contact you, Dick. We need none of us slackers to be able to do it.
I just laughed when I saw it on the list. Okay.
I did a lot of research to make sure we can kind of at least get some background on him. You know, we're on the West Coast. There's not a lot of information out here on him. He's just now starting to get popular enough that you start seeing him popping up in places and really getting his name out there. So I had to do some homework on the internet and, you know, look around and find out what I could as far as trying to, you know, figure out his brewing style, get in his head, and listen to the interviews on both sides. There's another interview also. And just put the pieces together and try and, you know, see where he's, you know, how we would put these beers together. So you want to talk a little bit about the recipe? And
yeah, why don't you give us the recipe. Tell us how you brewed this bad boy.
Okay. Most of this I was worried about percentages, so the poundage and ounces are off a little bit as far as the reason why they look funny is he was in percentages, so I just wanted to match that as close as I can. Because
yeah, that's what we do.
I was scared about the color. I mean, this is really off yellow, so it's just a little bit one way or the other, and it would be able to pick up. So,
well, and here's one tip to anybody trying to clone a beer from a brewery when they give you percentages, is work in the metric system. Work with kilograms and grams, and then essentially what I do is I type in, if they say 80%, I type in 8 kilos of that. If they say 6% or something, I type in 0.6. 6 kilos, 600 grams. And you can work really easy with that for percentages.
Now you tell me that.
And then, yeah. And then if you really want to see it in pounds and ounces, you flip your program back to pounds and ounces, and then you can see the funky numbers. It's really hard to do otherwise. But if you work in metric, it's really easy to set up, and then you can dial up the, you know.
Yeah, I had to play with the numbers quite a bit. Thanks for giving that little email out. That
little tip there, yeah. Next time you do this.
That base 16 is not that easy.
So we got 51% Pilsner malt, which is 4.38 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
25.5% pale malt.
What kind of pale malt did you use?
Just raw two row.
Okay. And the Pilsner is a...
Just regular old German Pilsner.
Continental Pils, okay.
Yeah. The two row is 2.19.
Mm-hmm.
Pounds. Just use white wheat, just regular old wheat.
Mm-hmm.
1.19 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And flake barley, 0.56 pounds. Crystal 80, 0.25. Black Patent, 0.02.
Okay, so that's the Black Patent malt.
Just a pinch. Yeah, it's a quarter of an ounce.
Okay.
And it's just obviously for color. Contribution. Mm-hmm. He mentions a pinch, so
7 grams.
I put a pinch.
And again, it's a Black Patent malt, so the malted Black Patent.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. And flaked raw barley.
And that's it for the recipe. Mash. He mentions he likes his mashes a little thinner. Mm-hmm. I do mine about 1.2, 1.25. So I went to 1.4. I don't know how much thinner that is. And mash temperature is 149.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's looking, a thinner mash helps dry it out. Lower temperatures help dry it out. He likes them. He mentions that he wants them as dry as he can get them. So you can see on the new version of his beer how bright and clean and sharp it is.
Right.
With the hops shine through, and it just finishes off the tongue with a high carbonation. All that plays right into line with those mash temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Hops, he mentions crystal hops. So that's what I went with all the way through. I didn't hear much information about anything else as far as other hops, so I said I'll just stick with that. We got crystal 3.8 alpha acids. 60-minute addition is 1.19. 30-minute addition is 0.82.
Those are ounces?
These are all ounces.
Mm-hmm.
I'll post it on the forum, and I'll give kilograms and grams for the recipe. I just didn't have that. Before the show. And so we got the 60-minute, 30-minute, and the 0-minute addition is 0.55.
Mm-hmm.
ounces, and the dry hop was a quarter of an ounce in five gallons.
Right. So you might even double that dry hop.
Huh? You could get away with, yeah, depending on how you weren't, you wanted that flavor to come through, right. You could probably double dry hop, right. And I'll talk about the dry hop technique. In the original beer that I had, Jumil gave me, was the older version of Band Beer, so the hop profile was a little bit soft, so I said, you know, I'm going to play it safe and put a quarter ounce in there.
Right.
The new fresh bright version, you definitely get the hop flavor coming through, and you can probably up the hops if that was your choice. More than a half of an ounce. I think you'd overpower it if you put much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the yeast. I had two versions of the beer. One was the dregs grown up from a bottle of Jolly Pumpkin, and it definitely character comes through, but it's a little too funky. And I was worried about, you know, the Brett shining through, growing that stuff up, and just mowing through this thing and drying it completely out. So I said, you know what, I'm going to make a version with just the yeast we can get at the homebrew store. For one, I needed something if I needed to blend with, or the Jolly Pumpkin just went totally off. And I thought it'd be nice to have some for somebody who can't get the Jolly Pumpkin beers and still wanted to recreate
like
this.
Right.
They can order all the stuff from Northern Brewer, More Beer, and they would be they'd be spot on.
Mm-hmm.
So Jolly Pumpkin was grown up, grown up in the bottle. So just did a two-step in the starter and then pitched it in. Fermentation was fine. Took it off. I got after fermentation temperature. I think I mentioned he's like 64 and ramps up. I didn't have that. I didn't have controlled temperature to get it down to 64, so it was 68, and I kind of kept it there until the very end to kind of dry it out a little bit. So one of the things you could, on how your process is, if you can get down to 64, that'd probably be a good place. So this was done. Mine was done at 68. So
yeah. There was a sulfur note in that beer, and sulfur is generally produced when yeast are under stress. So I wonder, that yeast from that bottle, I don't know if it would improve with, multiple repitchings and, it could get returned to health. But, that's always a kind of a response to stress is kicking off a lot of sulfur. And that ended up pretty sulfury.
Yeah.
And I think that was our least favorite of the beers.
Yeah, mostly through the sulfur notes, yeah.
And I have a question. Isn't just growing it up from such a small amount in a bottle a stressful activity? I mean, I know there's really safe ways to do it, to be the best you can to it, but it seems risky to me.
Well, I'd start with like, a 10-20 wort and, run it through a couple of times. If you're trying to get a pure culture, I would plate it and see what grows. Get a single cell that grows to a little colony, pick that colony, and then grow it up some 10-20 wort a few times, and then move on to more of a regular starter wort and go from there. And that would be really the way to do a single cell culture. But this is a multi-cell, multi-strain culture. So
well, there's bacteria and
really
yeast in this thing. Yeah.
You
lose that house flavor.
But I thought you were much closer with the 550 and the Brett. Which Brett did you use?
The Brett, after it was fermented, when I added in the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary was just a keg, corny keg, with the oaks and in the dry hops. So I'll talk about how I did that and the amounts on that. But the strain, I added it to the secondary. It was Lambicus and Bruxellus. So if you just pitched a vial of each one of those straight from White Labs into the secondary, you'd be fine. If you start pitching the primary, it might run on you and get a little too funky. So that's what I was worried about. Just the settled background. When it's fresh and clean, this beer, there's not much Brett flavor. Hops come through nice and dry, and then as it starts to age, those things do start to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was kind of after with that.
Okay.
And as far as getting that oak character, that was the tough one for me. I was kind of, mulled that over. How am I going to recreate that nice, soft oak flavor? Because if you just put oak chips, half an ounce and so in a keg, it smells like oak chips.
They dominate real quick.
A huge aromatic property. So I need to muddle those out a little bit to make it, like, I needed an old barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that old barrel, kind of used barrel kind of.
Okay. That sounds really tricky.
let's do this. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, tell us how you were able to mimic these old barrels that they're reusing, obviously, at Jolly Pumpkin. Because that's something I'm not sure how I would do. Back after this.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
Mother...
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
BN Army members, are you looking for an even better deal on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. NicoBrew.com will be running their biggest sale on hops yet, with 19 varieties for only $19 or less per pound. Varieties like Cascade, Centennial, Willamette, and more. The sale begins October 11th and runs through the 29th. Be sure to use coupon code BNARMY to get these awesome prices, whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag. All hops are shipped vacuum sealed and frozen straight to you. And $5 flat rate shipping includes all 50 states. And for hops, that means you too, Alaska and Hawaii. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. Remember coupon code BNARMY for the Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's NikoBrew.com. NicoBrew.com, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
In the past year, the Brewing Network has been able to add two new shows, expand our studio capabilities and quality, and bring more beer information home to you than ever before. In no small part, this is due to subscribers like you. Thank you from all of us at the Brewing Network. Without your monthly support of any denomination, we could not bring you the very best in live beer radio like Can You Brew It, Brew Strong, and The Sunday Session. Haven't signed up yet? Join your fellow brewers in the BN Army. Sign up today at thebrewingnetwork.com for a recurring donation as little as $2 a month. Besides all the great live radio you'll support, every subscriber is automatically entered in monthly raffles for amazing brew gear like a conical fermenter, a temperature control system, or your own draft setup. Become a part of the BN Army today.
Hilo, what's it feel like?
Take off of and multiply it by two?
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby!
It's the Brewing Network.
And now, suck it, Tasty.
Yeah, suck it, Tasty.
Hey, easy.
Last time I say it's cloned for one of your beers.
Tasty has his own video game.
I don't need you. About that earlier before the show. Yeah.
No more. I'm going to have to take out all the suck it, Tasty promos. He's got his own video game now.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to call a game then, I think. So that'll be like another promo for me.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Suck it, Tasty. Yeah, it's a porn game.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Yeah.
Where Tasty is...
Well, that's what you'll think.
Right. Like, here. Try this hose, Tasty. Suck it.
Be like the glory hole thing or something.
Yeah.
Tasty in the glory hole.
That's part two of Suck It, Tasty. That's
level right. 10, there's just like, all these holes look like freaking Swiss cheese.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, they're just coming out left and right, and you're just, you just can't suck fast enough.
It's
you know?
Like whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Whack-a-pole.
It's whack-a-pole.
Yeah, suck-a-pole, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Maybe if
the
I
show's
don't whack
gone
it
in the crapper already.
Yeah, yeah. Is we on yet?
Yeah. Is this mic on? Unfortunately, yes.
Ooh.
All right. So, Mike, before the break, you were talking about how you needed to mimic, already used barrels. Because what we get in the homebrew shop when we're buying cubes or chips or whatever, they tend to be fairly fresh. They have a lot of flavor to them, a lot of tannins, things like that. But Jolly Pumpkin, they've been using their barrels for quite a while. And they have a blend of barrels, French and American. And, how in the world did you... I think you did quite a good job of mimicking the oak character. How'd you do that?
Yeah, I looked at a couple of pictures from... Jolly Pumpkin, and you can see his barrel room. He's got all different sizes. He's got big ones, small ones, American French. He's got a big selection. So I was like, well, how am I going to mimic that? Because it's obviously a blend of different barrels. So I did the simple thing, and I got these are oak cubes that I used. I used 0.15 ounces of American oak and 0.15 of French. Figuring we'll do a blend of the different chips. And then now that we have cubes, sorry, I used cubes. And now I just couldn't pitch those in because new oak is just so noticeable and so mm-hmm. aromatic that I didn't want that flavor. It would have been too much. It would have came through and would have ruined the beer. So little Pyrex cooking measuring glass, put the chips in there. So it doubled. Chips are about not a quarter ounce. Cubes. Mm-hmm. So you put about a half ounce of water. So just double the size of the cubes, as much water as I put in there. And boiled it for about 30 seconds in the microwave until it kind of came to a boil. And then you'll see the water change colors.
Turns brown.
Yeah. And then just poured it off mm-hmm. and just put mm-hmm. the cubes in there.
So I removed a lot of the tannins and a lot of that.
Aromatics.
Nudus, yeah. Oils, whatever there's.
Yeah. So you had that.
The wood oil. Yeah.
So, and then I pitched that into the tank with the dry hops and let mm-hmm. it sit. It sat on the dry hops and the oak for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And after the beer was done, and I used carboys, racked it into the keg on top of the dry hops, and the oak was in the same time. And for the 550 one that I put the store-bought yeast, pitched the yeast at that same time. For the Brett,
mm-hmm.
Filled it up 5 gallons and let it sit for another 2 weeks and kind of tasted it along the way. My dip tube's a little cut, so it won't pull from the very bottom, so everything settles and you can still pull beer off of it and let everything alone. And just kind of kept tasting along the way in about 2 weeks, and that's about pulled it off and tasted pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then racked it over to another keg that was no dry hops and no oak and let it sit
mm-hmm.
for probably a good month and a half to, I think, how long did go did you give me the I brewed it pretty quick after you gave me, so at least a month and a half it's been,
yeah,
so
it's been a couple months,
yeah. So that I let it sit in the, pretty much at 70, 68, 70 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Moved it to the cold box a couple weeks ago, and here it is.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
And then one of the things is when you rack from keg to keg, make sure you purge that thing out. Oxygen pickup is the worst thing from finished beer. So I'm really worried about that. So purge the kegs all the time. Worked out really well. So So as far as the final, you want to redo the recipe? Are we good on that? Or how?
Well, let's see. We've got any questions from the chat room?
I do, yeah. A lot of the questions are kind of the same about the building up of bugs. There's a lot out there that says, you could just kind of inoculate with the dregs from some of these bottles and not have to worry about doing a starter or building them up. So that's kind of their question, is that how important is it for us to build up if it's the bugs part, not, the actual bugs. Can we just throw the dregs in, or do we need to do a build up?
As far as let's just say for this particular beer, we made it with the WLP 550, and
yeah.
then just took an extra. If you had the dregs from that bottle pitched in instead of buying the Brett, you probably could do that. They're going to be a little bit, as they say, sleepy, and might or might not get some character out of it, depending how old it is. I don't think in 2 weeks you're going to get a noticeable Brett character because they're not active. But if you grew those up and then pitched it in the secondary, just a small, that would probably be sufficient.
So you'd prefer a buildup?
Oh, yeah.
For the primary ferment, because you're getting the yeast.
I think they're talking about secondary.
Yeah, the Brett side of it. They could just throw the dregs from the bottle in there.
Because you're just pitching, think about it, you're pitching bugs that are dormant into alcohol.
Yeah.
They're just going to have a hard time. Brett's mm-hmm. a great thing, and eventually they're going to come awake and they're going to do it, but it could take 6 months
just
before.
Time.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit more time.
Okay.
And this beer needs to be, that's what's great about it. You can drink it fresh, or you can stick it away for, a year or so, and it's good either way.
Okay. And then another question along those same lines, NH Brewers in the chat, he wants to know what you think about, using the 550 for the primary, and then the dregs for the secondary, the bugs for the secondary, instead of 550 all the way through.
I think that would be fairly close. I would still grow those up a little bit in the bottle.
You
maybe
would.
Put a little bit of wort, in the bottle itself, and then a couple of days you'll start to see a little bit of active fermentation, and then pitch that into the secondary.
Just wake them up.
Man. Yeah, wake them up a little bit, because like I said, you don't want to... I mean, this is a low alcohol beer, but it might take a little bit longer for some characters to show through if you pitch them on some alcohol.
Okay.
So that's... And one of the reasons why, I mean, that's a good point. I could have done that, but I wanted to make a beer as close as I could with just yeast that I could buy.
Right.
Just for those one people that, you know, that like this beer or can't get it. So.
And again, that was our closest one. That's the one we called Clone. Okay, and then last question. In the discussion about oak barrels and using oak, somebody maybe mentioned breaking in a new oak barrel. And someone wanted to know how to do that. Is that something
gently.
We can... always gently. Is that something we can cover in this short amount of time? How to break in a new oak barrel?
Caress.
And gently. Leave it at Tasty's house?
It's just huge oak character right away. It's going to come through. I guess you could soak it in some, you know, like a water acid
right.
solution.
Yeah.
To pull some of those and keep pouring that out.
You can do, a sulfite or a citric acid and... metabisulfite blend, and then store it that way, and that'll actually leach a lot of the tannins and stuff, and you can use hot water and things like that. You don't want to use too hot of water. You can damage your barrel that way. But what I do is just pour whatever beer in there and just let it sit and let it soak up a lot of the tannins and stuff, and then just when it starts tasting a bit too oaky, go ahead and just drink it and add more beer in there, and just go that way, and in a couple of years, it's ready to go. Rock and roll. Or you can take the whole barrel, put it in the microwave, a little bit of water.
The whole barrel.
Just kidding.
There you go. Yeah.
Just kidding.
I'm glad you said just kidding. I'm the guy who would try that.
Right.
You'd doesn't
like,
fit.
Oh, you know, there's sparks coming off the staves. Or the bands.
I'm going to do it with the door open.
It doesn't quite fit.
All right, that's it from the chat room, guys. Good show.
Cool. Mike, you want to kind of recap that recipe for us quickly? And we'll be off and running.
We can do that here. Let me just shuffle my paperwork around. So we got just regular German Pilsner, 4.38 pounds, two-row, American two-row, 2.19, just regular old good old white wheat, 1.19, flake barley, 0.56, crystal 80, 0.25, and black peatant. Is a quarter of an ounce. And the hops are a crystal all the way through, 1.19 at 60, 0.82 ounces at 30, 0.55 at zero, and a quarter ounce dry hop. And a quarter ounce of, actually it was 0.3 total oak chips, split 0.15 ounces of American, 0.15 ounces of French, boiled in the microwave to dilute some of that oak flavor. And yeast is WLP 550 primary. Secondary is Brettanomyces, Bruxelles, and Lambicus. And you could substitute the dregs from Jolly Pumpkin as in the secondary. If you want a little more funky, you can use it as a primary all the way through, and you won't even have to add anything for the secondary. So if you had a fresh
550 and then the
even
Jamil
mentions
the drinks, yeah.
Or pitch a vial with in
with,
the primary.
With the dregs, yeah.
And if you had a fresh version, I think you'd be a little bit closer than
right.
I got.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't have the dates. Like I said, this bottle could be quite old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how the production date is on that. But
And then drink.
Yeah.
As Mr. Police would say.
And it's great starting gravity is 1.037. A nice light. Amazing beer for us. This is the lightest beer
I've
ever
made.
That,
man.
Yeah. And what does it finish out at?
Right around 10-10, I think he mentions. I think that's... And I my numbers were... I don't have those finishing numbers, but I checked mine against his commercial examples.
Or and even lower than that.
Is it?
If that ABV is 4.7, boy.
That's got to go down to 7.
It's
got to
be like 0 to get to 4.7. That doesn't sound right. Well... I certainly didn't notice it in the difference between the, there was no alcohol or body or any difference between those.
No.
Great job, Mike. Thank you very much for taking that challenge on. I know it was a tough one, and literally, unless we're going to contact Ron Jeffries
to brew it for us. I can't think of anyone else that I would have gone to.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Right. So thanks very much. Thanks for listening. If you get a chance, you know, go check out our sponsor, Northern Brewer. They are out there at northernbrewer.com. Awesome folks, awesome prices, awesome products. They are the best because they keep this show going. And make sure you they feel the love from you guys as well. And if you get a chance, stop by the Brew Network store. Maybe get yourself a subscription to BYO or Zymergy, something like that. Lots of good stuff out there. Anyways, until later on, when we do the next beer, brew strong.